Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hi.
How are you? I mean, I feel like you need to explain.
Yeah, it's been a tough week.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
Yeah, I had a death in my family, so I've been traveling back and forth between New York and Michigan. And so that's never fun. It's a tough time. And so I really didn't have any time to prepare a regular episode. So we're going to be telling some Reddit stories today.
Right.
Yeah, usually I like to spread out our Reddit episodes. We had one, I think, last month, but I figure you guys will forgive me for having one so soon.
More than understandable.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that you got an episode out this week is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's exhausting.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a fun time, but we're here and I'm home now and we're going to talk about some Reddit stories. So why don't we do that?
Sounds good.
The theme is generally Halloween. So,
fair enough. We are generally close to October.
Yes, we are. Actually, when this episode comes out, it will be, I think, the day before October. So we're so close.
Right.
So close to actual Halloween time. And on top of it all, I am a little bit sick. So sorry if I sound a little sick. If you notice that, it's because I am. So
yeah, me too. Whatever you had, I also had this week.
Yeah.
It wasn't COVID.
No.
But it was also like the annoying level of sick where it's affecting me, but it's not bad enough to the point where you take off work necessarily.
Yes.
I don't know. It just wasn't great.
It is what it is.
Yeah, that's also true.
I'm obviously sugarcoating it right now because what else am I going to do on the podcast? But yeah. We're congested and we're going to talk about some Reddit stories. So why don't we do that?
But I mean, also it is true. I feel like there's been a number of times where just like, yeah, reality just unfolds.
Yeah. Like, you know? I'm obviously on the struggle bus this week and that is just how the cookie hello. Yeah. That's the perfect illustration. That's just how the cookie crumbles sometimes. And that's okay. I hope none of you can relate, but I'm sure some of you can. And that, you know, power to you. I hope some of you find some strength in this episode with me or something. I don't know. I don't even know what the fuck I'm saying. Hopefully you just enjoy some Halloween Reddit stories. I feel delirious. I'm exhausted. Let's just talk about some Halloween stories.
Yeah, also you flew in today.
Yeah, so. I literally got home like a couple hours ago. So let's just talk about some Halloween stories, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, great. This first one is titled, My Friend Claimed She Was a Witch and Tried to Kill Her Parents.
Whoa.
And the Redditor who wrote it is CL Cliff. These events happened over several months in 2016 when me and my sister, then 16 and 14, first moved into our most recent apartment complex with our mother. We now call it the apartment complex from hell because there were many incidents like this. Admittedly, we were still into the hoverboard craze then and would ride them around. This is how we met Savannah. She was our age and lived in the building. She asked to hang out, and we were happy to hopefully make a new friend, so we said yes. We hung out outside the complex at a little park area. It got dark, and we started making up ghost stories. Turns out she liked creepy paranormal stuff like we did. Note, I did not actually believe in this stuff and still don't. Every time I reference the paranormal, it's hyperbole. As we were walking home, the light in one of the apartment hallways flickered, and I joked and said it was a spirit trying to communicate with us. Savannah made up a, quote, flash once for yes, twice for no system to communicate with the quote-unquote spirit, and we messed around a bit. We thought it was just harmless fun. The next day, she runs over to us, excited. She informed us the spirit we had met last night told her its name was Kieran and that it meant light, so it all made perfect sense now. We asked her how she knew, and she said she went back later that night alone to talk to it. This was the first time it occurred to us that she might have really believed in this stuff. Our aunt had given us an old Ouija board as a joke the year before, and we thought Savannah might like it. Savannah lit up and she said she wanted to try to talk to Kieran, so we huddled in the hallway connecting the apartments and put our hands on the board. We kept getting random letters that didn't make sense, but soon Savannah's questions were directed to Kieran. We felt her moving the planchette and called her out, but she got mad and said she'd prove it. She took her hands off the planchette and it no longer moved. She just huffed and insisted it wasn't her. Over the next few weeks, we did mostly normal stuff with her. She kept talking about the ghosts and Ouija boards until we broke down and played it once again. This time, we were introduced to a new ghost, Evan. We knew it was Savannah moving the planchette, but we were curious about the story she was making, so we let her follow through. Evan was a ghost, or demon rather, about our age who wanted free...
The phrase demon about our age is hilarious.
It is pretty funny.
Like, really? Demons are 16?
He's about our age.
Right.
15 years old. Who wanted free from a greater demon controlling him.
Perfect sense.
Yeah.
Right?
Makes perfect sense. That greater demon's name? Question mark? Kieran. Savannah's parents called her inside, and conveniently, Evan, quote unquote, had to go too. He told us he'd protect us against Kieran, especially Savannah. Savannah commented on how cute that was for him to offer. So she's flirting with a demon that she made up?
I don't know. Well, this is strange.
Yeah. A few days go by normally, but then Savannah's back to tell us she has a boyfriend. We are happy for her until she tells us his name is Evan. We're wondering what the hell she's talking about, and she explains that while we're sleeping over at another friend's house, something had tugged off her shorts while she slept. She'd woken up and heard Evan's voice, in parentheses, question mark, then he visited her in her dreams and asked to date, or something like that. She said yes, of course, and we know she made up Evan, so we're all kind of like, what is wrong with you, and we don't talk about the demon stuff anymore. Now, Savannah was extremely possessive over her friends. When she'd see us with someone else, she'd text us nonstop about why we hadn't invited her. We tried to keep our distance, but she lived on the ground floor and literally watched out her window waiting for us to come outside. She'd latch on to us. We didn't know much about her home life, but she always seemed troubled. She had scars on her wrists and talked about running away from home. Her parents seemed all right, if rather strict and religious. We still hung out with her because we were worried, but we started to feel weird about it. Worse, she randomly show up holding her hands out, saying Evan was holding her hand. She'd look at random things and laugh when no one was talking because Evan had told her a joke. Once she made us feel her cheek where it was supposedly warm from Evan kissing her. It was not warm. One day, my sister and I were bored from her talking to Evan, quote-unquote, on the Ouija board. She was still controlling the whole thing and wanted some fun. I texted my mom to call my phone from a blocked number and play creepy sounds. Looking back, this was one of the dumbest things I did. But at the time, it was just for fun.
Oh, her mom is in on it?
Yeah, she's texting her mom from to be like, call me from a blocked number and play creepy music.
Oh my God.
She said, looking back, this was one of the dumbest things I did, but at the time, it was just for fun. My mom made the call, and I put it on speaker. Savannah was living for it, especially when my mom played a track from a scary movie about a ghost. My mom took it a step further and threw a banana off our third-story balcony for us to see. Savannah said it was a sign that Kieran was winning. We had no idea of the fire this would light in her. We were about to tell her it was a prank, but again, her mom called her inside. She found us again the next day, and I came clean about the prank. She laughed and said there was no way we could have done that. I said, no, my mom literally did all of it. Well, Savannah had told her friends about it, who told her that yellow objects, like the banana, were a sign of the devil, and seeing them meant the devil was hunting you.
Oh my God.
This was all she talked about for a while, but since nothing else happened, she gradually forgot. Things went back to normal for a while, until Autumn moved in. Autumn and Savannah connected instantly because of their history with depression. Autumn was a few years younger than us, but had a hell of a lot more of a past. This included significant time spent in psychiatric facilities and violence toward her classmates and family. Autumn claimed she had heard demons talk to her at night, and just like that, the ghost stuff started again. Savannah felt threatened by Autumn and felt the need to one-up her with the ghost stuff. She told her Evan was her ghost brother that looked out for her. I was like, hold on, you claimed he was your boyfriend. She giggled and said, that's gross, he's my brother. Her story completely switched. Now she was quote-unquote dating another demon named Jacob, and they were engaged. She even showed us a ring to prove it. The next week or so was literally like a match between them to see who was the darkest and most involved in the spiritual world or whatever. They'd compare scars on their wrists and brag about cutting themselves and doing things like sneaking out in the night.
This is not good.
No, it's not.
No.
In a move to one-up Autumn, Savannah drew a giant pentagram in the parking lot with chalk. Her parents found out, and she backed out and blamed it on Autumn. The next freaking day, people come to repave the parking lot. The pentagram is now buried under it forever, literally. Savannah moved on to saying her friend had found Jacob's body and was going to put his spirit back inside it. Savannah continued to take advice from this friend who fueled everything she did. Savannah now said the friend was teaching her witchcraft. We mostly avoided her at this point, but she'd ask us to do things like make holy water with her and try to summon her a familiar. From that point on, she insisted she was a fire witch and walked around wearing all black with Halloween-like makeup on her face. She and Autumn frequently snuck out together, and occasionally we'd see a cop car at her house. My sister and I were avoiding them both, but now we'd get fiery texts from both of them if we hung out with other people, especially our guy friends. Once they saw us get home and stood in the parking lot pretending to be possessed. Autumn also cut off all her hair and claimed to have tried to kill her teacher. My sister and I knew it was bullshit, or at least we hoped, but Savannah took it so seriously. She'd go around telling neighbors of terrible crimes she committed or wanted to commit. She even told us that when she'd first seen us outside with our hoverboards that she'd wished for them to blow up. One day we again saw the police come to her door, and the officers had jackets that said they were from Juvenile Justice Department. Her mom pulled me, my sister, and our mom aside to explain what was going on. Apparently, 2 years before, they discovered Savannah talking with a man online. Her messages to him were hiring him to come literally kill her parents after making threats of killing them a few days before. We were able to confirm the story after pet-sitting for them and finding court papers about it. We'd known she was on probation, but she'd always tell us a different story as to why. Savannah continued to beg us to hang out with her after that, even inviting herself to spend the night. We avoided her at all costs, but she'd follow us everywhere. It kind of died down when Autumn moved out, and Savannah moved with her family shortly after. Since then, she started doing service hours at a horse stable and graduated high school. I really hope she's gotten happier and more stable. Autumn messaged my sister a few months ago asking her to call my mom to confirm she was with us. In parentheses, she wasn't. And we later saw her with a 19-year-old dude. She's 14 now. Me and my sister and mom have moved as well. There were too many incidents in those apartments. Our new place is so quiet and peaceful, but to Savannah and Autumn, let's never meet again.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
So I hope that they eventually got help.
Right. I do too.
Because this is clearly some troubled behavior.
It seems like at least one of them is doing a little better with their stables, working in the stables with horses. But yeah, I mean, the beginning part with the whole this demon boyfriend was kind of wild. And the Ouija board, I mean, I'm not a fan of the Ouija board.
And we know that.
And then at the ending, with just sprinkling in that this girl's trying to hire a hitman was a little... That seemed like a little bit of a, you're burying the lead there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's not nothing. I mean, did she get like juvie time for that? There's like court document. Could you imagine?
I think so, yeah. That's what they said.
Like prosecuting your daughter? You're like, yeah, she tried to kill us.
Right, like, and then literally. You just move away with your daughter. It's like you have to continue being her parent after right. she tried to get you killed. That's awkward. At the very least. You know, like,
you have to go back to being like, honey, what do you want for dinner or lunch?
You just got to go back to normal.
Do you want to go see a movie?
And then when she's drawing pentagrams in the parking lot, you have to like take that one seriously. You can't be like, oh, that's just Savannah. You have to be like, oh, no, let's get her professional help.
Yeah, because the other thing was that they were saying her parents were really religious.
Right. So, I did forget about that part. Yeah, so that would be alarming to a very religious set of parents, I could imagine.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, talk about rebellion from a teenager for like a really religious upbringing is just going full pentagram on them. That's a pretty hard left.
Yeah. I mean.
And being like, oh yeah, I'm engaged to a demon. That's what she said. She said, I'm engaged to a demon. Here's my ring.
Right. Yeah. I mean, do you think that like at some point that they just like gave up?
If she didn't try to get her parents killed, like that's kind of hard. Like that's pretty, like if she didn't take it too far, I'd be like, honestly, go off. You know?
Yeah. I mean, you know. Take away all the other troubled behavior.
Yeah.
And, you know,
right.
If
like,
you're just doing it to piss them off,
good. Yeah.
That's honestly a great line. But, you know,
right.
We're against killing your parents.
Well, definitely that. Yeah. I don't condone. She obviously was troubled and I wish she could have gotten help sooner because she obviously needed it. But like the whole like talking to ghosts and like the, you know, whatever that stuff could be. On its own, harmless, but I guess that's debatable, but I could talk about that for a long time. We don't have to get into that, but anyway, this one was just kind of interesting to me because I was like, what the hell was going on here?
I know, but there's so much that's missing. It's like, what was their dynamic like? Like, we didn't get any of their interaction with the parent.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Because it really is just like kind of, you know, their authentic story because like you don't see most of her experiences. It's just like when you get to hang out with her.
Yeah, it was also just the worst combination of like this Autumn and Savannah just coming together and just trying to one-up each other. So I wonder if without Autumn there, if Savannah would have done that. I mean, maybe, because she obviously was very troubled and, you know, whatever, something she needed help. But like that dynamic probably egged that on a little bit.
Yeah, it didn't make it better.
No.
I'll put it that way.
Yeah. So, interesting. Interesting dynamic, at the very least. But anyway, this is our warm-up story, which is kind of crazy to say, because already a lot happened.
Yeah.
But anyway, why don't we move on to story number two, shall we?
Let's do it.
Okay. Our next one is titled Dark House in the Woods, and the Redditor that wrote it was Here for L&M.
Me too.
What is L&M?
L&M. I don't know.
I hope that's nothing bad, because I don't know.
Ladies and men.
Sure. That's what we'll say it is.
A bi queen.
Love that. I've had a few scary encounters in my life. In parentheses, not sure if that means that I'm old or just a creep magnet, but this one still creeps me out. In the early 80s, when I was 8, my family was visiting my uncle who lived in Backwoods, Missouri. He lived on a lot of land, and the only other people who really even lived on the street were relatives, so no one else ever just happened to be out there. This meant no one ever locked their doors, because random family members were always coming by for this or that. One night while we were there, my parents, an aunt and uncle decided to go to a nearby town to go bowling, because bowling. My brothers, who were 11 and 12, my female cousins, 6 and 14, and I, female, stayed home. It was still daylight when the adults left, but it started raining pretty hard and got dark quickly. We used to play this game that was essentially hide-and-seek in the dark house, but we cleverly called it vampire. There was a thin little mattress on the living room floor that some of the kids would sleep on at night, so the person who was it would lie on the mattress and fold it over themselves like a coffin and count down to midnight. When they got to midnight, they went looking for you. In parentheses, again, all of the lights are off. And you tried to make it back to the coffin before you got caught. So it seems like it's hide and seek tag.
I know. I love it.
Yeah, I love it.
I would play it.
I'm in.
I'm
Sounds
28.
Awesome.
I'll play it.
100%. Because the house was in the country, it was pitch black at night. You couldn't see your hand in front of your face. What this meant for the game was that, one, you couldn't tell where the vampire was looking, so you just had to make a break for it, and two, if you were extremely lazy, and I'm sure by now you can guess which one of us met those standards, you could hide in the living room with the coffin and get to base quickly. Ben, my 11-year-old brother, was it and was doing the normal countdown. I was hiding maybe 6 feet from him. As he was counting, there was a flash of lightning. I don't know if I was already looking at the living room window or if the lightning made me look, but with the backlight of the lightning, I see a man with his face against the window, in all caps. He had his hands on each side of his face as if he's trying to peer in and look exactly like the stereotypical creepster, heavy set, scraggly beard, etc.
No, no, grab the shotgun.
We know you have
We're
one.
In Missouri. Or a rifle or something.
Yeah.
The kids are home alone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time for the gun.
Yeah, right. Only kids,
I'm
grab
like,
the gun.
No, it's funny, but I guess I'm not even joking. There's a creeper.
Well, yeah.
Trying to get you, your safety is in danger.
I do understand it is.
Have the 14-year-old do it.
Very scary. I could feel every hair on my body standing on end. Immediately, I began to try to convince myself that I didn't see what I saw, but then Ben sternly whispered, "If anyone is hiding in here, stay still." I sort of croaked out and, "I'm here," right as there was another flash of lightning. Creepster was still there, but was no longer trying to look in the window. Instead, he was now looking toward the front door. Ben and I immediately knew what was coming next. From where he was standing, Creepster was probably only 5 feet from the front door. Ben was the same distance, but there was a couch between him and the door. Ben leapt over the couch and locked the door right as the Creepster started trying the handle.
Oh my god. Terrifying. Hara.
The Hara.
No, a Hara.
At this point, I guess Ben decided that it was the best to let the creepster know that people were home and that we knew he was there because he flipped on the porch light and then started turning on the lights in the house. This is going.
He knows you're there.
Well, yeah. This is going to sound weird, but I was too terrified to panic. Having said that, I was relying completely on Ben to know and to tell me what to do. He told me to go lock the other doors and was yelling for everyone else to come out and lock all of the windows. Because like they said in the beginning, nothing was locked.
Whoa. I mean, how many things do you have to lock? That's crazy.
It's probably a big house.
Yeah.
Honestly, the next few minutes are hazy in my mind. I remember everything up until this point extremely clearly. Then I remember the end very clearly. But I'm less clear about the middle. I know that I locked the side door and then the sliding glass door on the back of the house. When we've talked about it over the years, some people remember us seeing him out the back door as well. I don't think I remember that. What I clearly recall is locking the sliding glass door and standing there frozen and hearing Ben in a very calm but firm voice say, "Close the curtain. Listen to me, okay? Close the curtain." So I did. Ben can't remember that part, and I just remember my fear and Ben's voice, so I'm not sure if I saw Creepster in the backyard or not. We tried to call the police, but my aunt and uncle had a stupid party line, and it wouldn't work, whether from the storm or from a neighbor leaving it off the hook or whatever. For the record, they are the only people I've ever known with a party line, so this wasn't normal to me either. But for those of you who don't know what this is, in really rural areas, multiple people on a street would actually share a phone line. It would have different rings for different households, but you could pick up the phone and listen to your neighbor's conversation.
Whoa.
We also tried to summon help on my uncle's CB radio, but couldn't reach anyone. My uncle was a hunter, so he had a gun rack full of rifles in his room.
Mm-hmm.
But my older cousin was on an out-of-town hunting trip and took them with him.
Bro.
All we could find was a BB gun that looked like a real rifle. I vividly remember...
Better than nothing.
Yeah. I vividly remember Ben putting me on phone duty and Scott, my older brother, on CB duty while he stood watch at the little square window on the front door with the BB gun. Maybe 30 minutes later, Ben said, "He's back. He's coming up the driveway." The rest of us froze in fear, but Ben opened the front door and stepped out on the porch, pointed the gun, and said, "Get out of here right now." Then we hear our cousin Kyle, who lived down the road a bit, say, "You know that's a BB gun, right?" Even though Kyle was only 15, I remember we felt like we had been saved when he showed up. Kyle seemed really skeptical of our story, like we were playing a trick on him, even though we had no idea that he was coming. But he stayed with us until our parents came home. Honestly, I don't remember if we even told our parents what happened when they got home. There was definitely no police involvement, though. We just went on with our trip. But we never played vampire again without some mention of that night. And then we have an edit. The person wrote, "I just talked to Ben. First, he doesn't have an account, but is so pleased that everyone thinks he handled himself well. Second, he said the story was pretty spot on to how he remembers it, but that the guy was at the back door. When we talked about it before, I thought he didn't remember that part, so I was confused on that. He said that as I was locking the side door, we saw Creepster moving around to the back of the house, so Ben told me to hurry and lock the sliding glass door. Those doors are right around the corner from each other, so I was closest. According to Ben, and this is what I thought happened, but I didn't want to say it unless I was positive, as soon as I flipped the lock on the back door, the guy was standing there, just looking at me. I just stood there for a couple of beats looking at him, and that's when Ben told me to close the curtain. We also saw him in the front yard one more time. I remembered this all along, but wanted to check with Ben to make sure he also remembered it before I added it in. It was a large front yard with a long gravel driveway. Off to one side of the driveway, quite a ways from the house, was a spot where my cousins parked cars they were working on. I know, so stereotypical. While we were on watch, we saw a Creepster messing with one of the cars. It was actually Kyle's. When he couldn't get it started, he walked into the woods that ran beside the house. We didn't see him again after that. And that's the end.
Whoa, he just like walks into the woods and disappears.
Yeah, he fucked with the car.
So eerie. Dude, what?
Yeah, that one is so scary. He's just sitting there,
peering in, hands on the side of his face.
And not even just that, like walked around and
actively tried.
Yeah, multiple doors and windows.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Stood at the back door and like stared at this kid.
Right. I'm like, I guess like this feels like maybe somebody who is like on the run, because I don't know. I feel like if you really wanted to like cause the children harm, why would you not break the window? I don't know.
I guess God, he would hurt so himself. Creepy.
Yeah, but I don't know. That's just so, I don't know how you move on from that or let alone ever play that game ever again.
They said they never played it without talking about it ever again.
Right. Ah, dude, I don't know. And then you go to the gun case and they're all gone. They're all gone?
Except for one BB gun.
One BB gun. I guess you fire off a few, you know, try and hit them in the head or something. I don't know.
Yeah, there's quite a few of these Reddit stories that like very easily could be made into a movie. And this is one of them.
I think it'd be hard to get to a full movie on this one, you know.
You could embellish, but the concept, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he would have to come back, right?
Yeah.
No, but I even think it's more eerie that he just, like, he comes in, shows up out of nowhere, tries to break in, and then just disappears.
Yeah.
Never to be seen again into the woods.
Yeah. And then, like, no police involvement and is just gone.
Yeah, just life moves on. Ooh. Probably won't happen again, right?
I don't know. I wonder if they
eat at me, dude.
Yeah. I wonder if they locked their doors after that.
I would have.
Yeah, well, you're right. We do. Yeah. But they still live.
We don't live in rural Missouri.
Yeah, I was going to say they still live in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by their family, so probably not. But anyway, creepy story nonetheless. Yeah. Anyway, they are okay and nothing happened. And we love to hear that, right?
We do. We do.
And we hope that creepster never comes back.
Yep.
And let's move on to the third story.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This next one is titled Incredibly Bizarre and Creepy Encounter at the Train Station. And the Redditor who wrote it is Illustrious Bread.
That's a good name.
I agree. While this was almost 16 years ago, I still remember every single detail about this encounter quite vividly. It was so random and so distinctly bizarre that I will never forget what happened. Sorry it's so long. Background, I'm 20 years old at the time, and after visiting my friends in college for the weekend, found myself traveling home alone and taking a late train from Boston out to the suburbs, where my car is parked. I'm running late and very concerned that I'm going to miss the last subway out of Boston, but gratefully the train I needed pulled up quickly. I remember being annoyed at myself for creating stress with such an unnecessarily close call, as I was definitely on either the very last or next to last train out of Boston. And while I have friends I could stay with, if I miss the last train, I have to work in the morning and my phone is completely dead. The ride is long and slow, and there is hardly a soul on the train after we leave the immediate Boston area, which isn't odd seeing how it's Sunday and after midnight. Halfway through the 45-minute ride, I doze off and jerk awake, hearing the blaring Baintree announcement, which is my stop. In my foggy state, I grab my bag and jump off the train, and the moment I realize I'm at the wrong stop, the doors close. Turns out they were just announcing the train destination, not the train stop. As you can imagine, I'm feeling pretty lousy about this, watching the train plot off in the direction I needed to be going. I'm the only person to get off the train, and this station is unfamiliar and utterly deserted. Quickly, I realize I'm in Quincy, 3 long stops away from my destination, and I'm feeling screwed. I really, really need there to be another train. I look around and realize I'm close to the end of a desolate and strikingly dark outdoor train platform. While the chances for there being another train so late is extremely slim, it's my only hope, and I begin to feel panicked, stupid, and vulnerable. After a minute or two of standing there dumbfounded and triple-checking that my phone was dead, I suddenly spot a man, standing alone under a light, a distance down the long and thin platform. A little ways further beyond him appears to be the only entrance/exit, unless there are some stairs going down into the terminal halfway down that I can't see. While the man makes me a little nervous, he's clearly facing the tracks, which gives me hope that one last train is on the way, thinking that maybe he just missed the one that I got off. I decided to just quietly sit on the bench close by and choose to stay unnoticed and in the dark while I wait. The bench is partially enclosed, and when I sit down on it, I'm basically obscured from the shoulders down by deep shadows and can still see in every direction but directly behind me. A quick glance around it, though, confirms I'm definitely alone down here. So on the dark bench, I sit and wait and feel comfortably obscured. With my wearing dark clothes and it being so dark on my end of the station, I have the opportunity to rather blatantly watch the man at the end of the platform. The well-lit man is tall, thin, not old, like 30s, light, slightly shaggy hair, and dressed casually preppy. He's strange, though, standing abnormally still, looking straight ahead in a weird way. Something is off, but he's minding his business and probably doesn't even know I'm here. And while I feel really uneasy, I do find some slight comfort in being certain that no one is down here with me and can openly watch the other person from my dark, hidden bench. After watching for a few minutes, the man begins to rock a little, placing weight on one foot and then another. He then takes a few slow steps toward the edge of the platform, and I notice that he's using a white and red walking cane for the visually impaired, and tapping and feeling his way as he walked forward. Suddenly, I'm very relieved, as this may explain his unusual posture. Just as I'm feeling more relaxed, the feeling vanishes. He's still walking toward the platform edge, and quickly, I stiffen and sit up straight, looking intently. He makes it to the bright yellow raised metal warning tread that is at the very edge of the platform, only a foot wide and directly before an 8-foot drop onto electrified train tracks. He stops there, banging his cane against the edge, toes literally at the furthest point. I stand up and walk a few paces closer as he starts to sway again, but more dramatically. My mind begins to race. What's going on? Is this a suicide situation? He's in a lot of danger. I want to take action and try to quickly figure out the best way because this poor man needs help of some kind. I'm just trying to figure out how to approach him because I really don't want to startle him with his being so very close to the edge. In fact, he's the furthest you can go, and his swaying has evolved to a kind of dance. Suddenly, after what seems like ages, but is probably just a minute or two, he stops and begins to take slow steps backwards until finally he returns to standing still and staring straight ahead, back under the spotlight. With my heart racing and mind spinning, I return to my dark bench, sit back down quietly, and try to process what's suddenly happening. I want to help this man, but I am being overwhelmed by alarms in my brain. I keep watching, and being as silent as possible, he stands calmly for a few minutes under the light, facing the tracks and safely several paces away from the edge. I decide to get help. I mean, he just did something crazy, really unnerving, and really dangerous, and I don't know what his intentions are. I'm still sitting on my dark bench, fighting off conflicting feelings and secretly watching him, when he suddenly turns his whole body to directly face me. Straight on facing me, exactly the angle to where I am sitting, and he's smiling. He's far away, but so well lit. I can tell he is absolutely smiling and looking suddenly right at me. I'm completely startled, and my jaw drops. My mind is now racing like crazy. He knows I'm here. He must know I'm here. But if he knows I'm here, why is he facing me? He knows exactly where I'm sitting. What? Is he actually blind? But I'm sitting in the dark and not making a sound. He's smiling. I freeze. Solid. What happens next is so sudden that I remain basically frozen like a statue, sitting on the dark bench the entire time, not making even the slightest sound. Suddenly, still smiling, he turns and faces the train tracks, and again, using his cane, walks right over to the very edge and begins his side-to-side swaying, except now it's even more dance-like. He then changes position, putting one foot right on the edge and one foot behind him, and starts this exaggerated lunging motion, in parentheses, as one would jump in front of a train, nearly jumping off the platform, but catching himself before he does. He does this repeatedly. All the while, I'm just watching from a distance, basically in, well, horror and confusion. Suddenly, he stops all this and turns. This time, he doesn't face me, but faces in my general direction, my end of the tracks, smiling still from what I can see. He slowly begins to walk down the platform toward me. He is walking right on the edge, directly on the warning track. The whole time I can hear the clack of the cane going side to side. He is so close to the edge that his cane is going into the darkness. He gets closer and closer, and I can do absolutely nothing but stare. How could he be walking so close to the edge? why is he coming down here? Closer and closer he gets, and I can now see him better. Still, the big gaping grin on his face, empty and farcical like a game show host. And his eyes, they're slammed shut. They aren't gently closed. They're aggressively and exaggeratedly closed, very, very tight. I know, though, that it's possible to peer a little bit while making this face. My mind is exploding, and I remain frozen solid. He is now so close, about 20 feet away. I'm thinking that if I hang on just one more minute, maybe he'll walk right by me. And with him out of the way of the entrance, I can run and go get help. And maybe, just maybe, his facing me, smiling, was just a coincidence. Maybe this whole time he has no idea I'm even here. Maybe he really is blind. But greatly to my dismay, only about 15 feet before he reaches me, he stops and turns and faces me, eyes still slammed quote-unquote shut, gaping smile. He is just now standing there on the edge of the platform facing me. His eyes are tightly quote-unquote shut, and he is facing right at me. This can't be possible, and feel like I am in a surreal nightmare. And then suddenly, it gets much worse. He starts making this weird, high-pitched, whimpering, moaning, feminine, soft laugh. He reaches for the zipper on his pants and unzips them while holding his cane. He pulls down his pants and underwear, exposing his penis, and then, while still facing me, starts jumping up and down, all while continuing to do that soft, coy laugh. He then changes position and starts doing that jumping from foot to foot, lunging motion like he's about to jump into the path of a train, except now his movement compromised by his pulled-down pants. He continues this smiling, eyes shut, penis flopping around this way and that, and making this simpering laugh. All the while I'm sitting there, in some kind of mesmerized horror state. Suddenly, I hear the train rattling loud and approaching fast. In frozen horror, I'm both groveling in thanks to God and terrified that at the end of this true insanity, I'm about to see someone commit suicide right in front of me, or accidentally get hit by a train. Right as the train reached the platform and started slowing down, he returns to simply swaying again and takes a step back. Being the very last train of the night, every car seems to have some people on it. I knew immediately I was probably safe. The train stops, and I sprint like hell down the platform, a few cars' distance down, and jump on. I don't know if he got on the train, too, or just stood there, but I definitely don't hear anyone yelling or anything, so I assume that he pulled up his pants either way. And so, once on the train, I sink into the seat, my mind thoroughly blown. My mind explodes in every single variation of the feeling that can basically be eloquently summed up as one giant what the fuck. Gratefully, at the end of all that, I really do feel immediately safe, and I'm not further subjected to worrying about him following me off the train, if he even got on, because there's always other people getting off at Baintree. It was all just quite simply so odd and bizarre that I felt like after all these years sharing it. It's easily the closest thing to a nightmare I've ever experienced. It was so weird, scary, surreal, and happened so quickly that it was almost like I coasted cleanly by being scared and just settled into a kind of hypnosis and unable to move. I'm not trying to be dramatic about it, I just don't know how else to describe it. Honestly, when I got on the train, I was just sitting there a bit tweaked, wide-eyed, and honestly laughing in my head at the sheer shock of it all. The immense feeling of relief I felt when I boarded the train quickly changed any feelings of horror to that shock, disbelief, and gratitude. And that's the end.
Dude, that is beyond terrifying. Like, this is another thing that could be made into a movie. He's, like, tightly shutting his eyes, and then he's just acting so erratic.
It's so terrifying.
And then he pulls out his wiener, like, 15 feet from you.
Yeah.
And the laugh. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine it, but like all of it together, so terrifying.
Yeah. This one, like really, like the visual of it is so unnerving.
The freeze worked here, but I don't even know how I would react alone, like on the platform.
Yeah. I'm also trying to remember if this is a female or male, did they say?
I don't know. I guess I'm assuming woman.
I'm assuming woman too, because they said they grabbed their bags, which I assumed was a purse.
You never know. I mean, I guess doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't really matter.
It's terrifying either way, but
yeah.
I could imagine would be so scary as a woman by
yourself.
There's
an extra layer for
oh my God.
As a woman.
A much deeper layer to be a woman by yourself on a deserted train platform with a terrifying man who's pulling out his wiener, as you said.
Yep.
Yeah, that is horrifying. So yeah, that one will make your skin crawl for sure.
Definitely.
There's just something about someone who like pulls out a grin, you know, like a really...
The smile.
It's just it's like something, what is it? Like something like Uncanny Valley about it, you know?
Yeah. Also, how did she describe it? It was like game show host, like empty.
Yeah, something like that.
Like,
gross. Anyway, that one got me. I was like, whew, that one.
Yep.
That one's real, real scary. But this next one is titled, Why I Never Trust a Clown. I was going to say crown, but even worse, a clown.
Okay. And you were a clown at one point in your life.
That's true.
Right.
But I was not a scary clown.
Right.
I was just an anxious clown.
A fun clown.
Yeah.
A fun clown with anxiety.
A lot of anxiety. Yes. And the person who wrote this was Crispy982.
These names.
Before anything, a little backstory. I was 10 at the time and was visiting my hometown, Ecuador, for the summer. At the time, I knew just about everyone in my small little town, Alassi, and so did my parents, which is why they let me go on my own that day. Anyways, here's my encounter. Back when I was 10 years old, my family decided to take a visit to my hometown of Ecuador. We went for the summer and planned out just about our whole stay. One day, my mom and dad were getting ready to go to a wedding, and I was in the house with them. My big sister went over to a friend's house, and my other relatives had already left for the wedding. I was supposed to stay home alone for the duration, but I saw that it was a beautiful day and decided to ask my mom and dad to go to a park that was no more than 2 blocks away. They were reluctant at first, stating that there would be nobody to take care of me, but I argued that it was a beautiful day out and there was no way that the park would be empty. They kept getting dressed as I kept on arguing until finally they gave in. They said that I can go to the park as long as I was back before dark. I agreed and ran outside to head for the park. It took me no more than 10 minutes to get there, and I was ready to make new friends and play around. But oddly enough, there was nobody else in the park. It looked abandoned, which was weird seeing how this was one of 2 parks in the whole city. It should have been packed, but I paid no mind to it. I believe I ran over to a swing set, or slide, it was 12 years ago, I can't remember, and played around. As I played, I suddenly heard a voice from the distance. A clown was on the other side of the gate, and motioning for me to get closer. Behind him was a white van, which I had noticed before, but just thought it was a delivery truck of sorts.
Yeah.
Cool.
No, get out of there.
I slowly started walking toward the clown and stopped a good distance away from him. He asked me in Spanish, "Hey kid, do you like clowns?"
"No, señor."
I nodded no to him, and he gave me that clown frown and then said, "Well then let me see if I can change that." He opened up his car, and by looking inside, I saw there was only 2 boxes, though I wasn't sure what they were filled with, and that was it. No seats, no posters, just those 2 boxes, and then complete emptiness. Being a child, I still paid no mind to it and watched as he pulled out a deflated balloon. He wrapped his lips around the end and blew till the balloon was fully inflated. He tied the end and started to form the balloon into a balloon animal of a dog. He showed it to me and I smiled. He then motioned me to come closer, to which I complied. He handed me the balloon and said, "Do you like?" I nodded yes this time and gave him a little smile. He then grinned in the creepiest way possible. The grin was so creepy that even as a kid, I knew to back away a bit. The clown then said that if I wanted to see the rest of his tricks, I would have to get into the truck. I told him that the exit was on the other side of the park and I wouldn't be able to climb the small gate. He then said the few words that haunt me to this day, "Get a little closer and I'll carry you over. Then we can have loads of fun in my truck. Come on, kid." While saying this, he still had that creepy grin plastered across his face. I merely backed away and told him, "No, it's okay, sir." His grin turned into anger, as though he were annoyed at this. He placed his hands on his hips and said to me, "Aw, but we're going to have so much fun." Right when he said that, I heard a voice on the other side of the park yelling, "Son, son, I'm here to pick you up." I turned and saw a man that I recognized as my local neighbor. He was not my real father, obviously, but little me knew to run over to him. I said nothing to the clown. I just ran to the man and gave him a hug. The man waved to the clown and said, "Thanks for keeping my kid entertained." To which the clown replied, "No problem." As we turned around, I was able to hear this man murmur, "Sick fuck." I looked at him and asked, "Sir, what exactly is going on?" He gave a sigh and explained everything. As it turns out, that was no real clown. He was a man that had been kidnapping kids across all of Ecuador. He would lure kids with a clown costume and take them away to God knows what place. The people of my town had a feeling he was coming to our town, which was why the whole park was deserted. He said that was why he was walking by when he noticed that I was talking to the clown and ran over to basically save me. As he told me this, he also dialed for the police to report the incident. We had finally arrived at my house, and this man said, "Be careful with who you talk to, son. Not everyone is who they seem." I gave him one final hug and gave him thanks for saving me from that sick fuck. He gave me a rub on the head and said, "It's okay, my boy. Now hurry on in. I have my own things to worry about." I nodded and ran into the house. Nobody was there, and by the time they had returned, I decided not to tell anyone since I knew they would flip the fuck out. It took a while to forget about the whole incident, especially with those words that kept reminding me of him, but I soon forgot till I came across this page and the memories of the clown flooded my head. I'm not quite sure what happened to the sicko, but hopefully he's now behind bars. So to that creepy clown from long ago, let's not meet.
Yeah.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wow, I mean...
Can I get a...
Yeah, shiver, and I mean stereotype to a T. Like, is this where it came from? Like, this is insane.
Yeah.
Like, hey, literally kid, a clown in a white van.
Get in my truck.
Alone at a park.
Yeah. I'll show you the cool balloon animal that I made.
Yeah.
We'll have loads of fun. I've got
candy in there.
How about
I show you this cool place? It's called jail.
Yeah.
To jail with you.
Seriously.
My God. Well, we hope he got caught. I mean, he certainly wasn't making it subtle.
No, he was not. Not at all.
Like, how does he not get caught?
I don't know.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that was like the most out in the open.
Yeah.
And it seems like, I mean, if this is actually what happened, which I mean, this Reddit thread is supposed to be true, and I believe it to be true. The people of this town knew he was coming, so they decided to not go to the park. Send the cops there.
Yeah.
I guess
how about
I don't
have
know.
A sting operation? I don't know.
Yeah. I guess I don't know like what was going on in Ecuador at the time. I don't know. But yeah, I hope he got caught because that's terrifying. And I really hope he didn't get more kids because he obviously got at least a few for them to know about it.
Yeah. Seriously.
Very scary.
Oh boy.
Very, very scary.
Let's not meet.
But But anyway, let's move on to our final story. This one is titled Chased and Stalked Through the Woods at Night. And this is one that absolutely could be made into a movie. It's very cinematic.
Such a strange way to describe being chased through the woods.
What?
Cinematic?
The way they wrote it is cinematic.
Okay.
It just is. I'm just letting you know. The person who wrote it is BlondeVenus91.
Every Reddit name has made me chuckle.
I love them.
I guess like I associate cinematic with a positive vibe. You know what I mean?
Positive. Interesting. I just relate that to like descriptive so you can like visualize it.
Sure. I don't know. I guess I think about it being used like, oh, we went in, we took a vacation. It was like so cinematic.
Interesting.
It was so ideal.
Huh. Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong.
We can unpack that another day.
Okay.
Let's get into the story. So it starts, hey, female, 24, UK. Despite a few creepy instances as a child, there has only been one time in my adult life that I have truly ever felt primal fear. My apology if it's a little long, but trust I am being as concise as possible and need to explain the surroundings a little at first. I live in a village in the middle of the English countryside. To paint an accurate picture of its size, it has a population of 4,000, but feels more like 1,000 due to its spread out nature and being surrounded on all sides by lots of fields, farms, and woods that eventually connects onto a pretty famous forest. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere, and because of this has notoriously bad phone and internet connections. Having lived here all my life, I know the place like the back of my hand. I know where all the public footpaths through the woods slash fields are, where they connect, which are shortcuts, where to cross deep streams, etc. I have gone on walks in this area throughout my childhood with parents and alone as an adult. Nothing bad has happened. I feel safe here. This story takes place last summer, in July, after I moved back home from university, and had yet to get a job and smoked a lot of weed. A habit my parents despised, and which I tried to keep hidden from them by going for evening quote-unquote walks, multiple pre-rolled joints hidden away in my hoodie pocket. As usual, this day they both got home at 5 p.m. We had dinner, but chatted for a while longer than usual, as my mom had quite a hectic day and was telling me about it. Because of this, I ended up heading out for my walk an hour later than routine, around 7 p.m. But as it was summer, the sun was still shining, so honestly I didn't really notice that it would start getting dark while I was still out. The woodland closest to my house is less than 5 minutes away, and you enter through a gate into a farmer's field. You can see across the open area quite far, until the first set of small woods obscures your view. That's where I was heading as I knew this track takes under 2 hours and leads back onto the same path I was standing on now. More than enough time to smoke the 3 joints in my pocket and for the smell to leave my clothing, I had thought. 3 joints.
That's a lot of joint. Maybe it was weak.
Holy moly.
But that's, I can't even do half.
I mean, power to you. I can barely do more than like 2 puffs.
Yeah.
But I'm a lightweight, so.
Yeah.
This entire area is very popular for dog walkers, so it's not unusual to see other people while you're about. And as this is a village, everybody says hello to everybody. I lit my first joint and started walking. I'm just in my own world for a while until I was less than 100 feet before the entrance to the woods. An elderly man was coming out of them, throwing a ball for his collie dog. I finished my joint and stubbed it out. As I got closer, I recognized it was John, who lived on the road next to mine, and knew my grandpa. We stopped and said hello, and I stroked his dog, Max. While talking, I see another man coming out of the woods. No dog. Bright green jacket. Very tall and had a good 10 years on me, age-wise. Me and John chat another minute and say goodbye. He warns me not to stay out here too long, as it will start getting dark soon. True, the sky was bright pink and orange. The sun was indeed beginning to set. I hadn't really noticed. I continued down the path towards the man. When we were nearly passing each other, I look up to make brief eye contact, smile, and say hello, like everyone here does, even if you don't recognize the person. My eyes instantly met his. He was already looking at me, his dark eyes locked on mine. He wasn't smiling. I didn't know him at all, but I knew something was wrong. It was in his eyes. I swallowed my politeness and looked at the ground as we passed. I had lived in my uni city the past couple of years, so I knew a red flag when I saw one, and my country bumpkin manners evaporated. I quickened my pace a little, and before entering the woods, slyly looked back. The guy was still walking in the same direction following John. I felt relieved, laughed, cursed the weed for making me paranoid while lighting up another joint and started walking into the woods. It takes about 30 minutes to follow the path through the woods to the end. The pathway exit opened into another field that led to another set of woods. The sky was now violet, the dimming light having been obscured to me by the trees. I was already smoking my last joint and was near the entrance to the second set of woods when I felt it. Fear. Complete, crippling, absolute fear worked its way like electricity through every layer of flesh. I'd never felt anything like it before or since, but I knew what it was. I whipped around. Standing at the exit of the first set of woods was the man. I could still make out his green jacket on the fading light. He fucking doubled back, and very quickly, too. I had looked back several times while in those trees, and he hadn't been there. For a second, I froze, as did he. He knew I'd seen. To sprint the distance between us would take him about 5 minutes. He was obviously in good shape. I threw the spliff and fucking bolted into the woods. The only way I could go. I didn't dare look behind me. I sprinted for a couple minutes before taking a sharp left turn off the path into the trees, hoping to throw him off a bit, but I couldn't see a fucking thing. The light was already darkening, and the trees made it 100 times worse, especially as it was now in the thick of them. Their branches catching on my clothes like fingers, whipping and scratching my bare legs so bad I bled. I ran and ran, my lungs protesting in pain, hating me for smoking so much, while my heart was throwing itself against my ribcage trying to escape. I couldn't anymore. I threw myself on the ground, behind a particularly thick trunk, my back against it, knees to my chest, hand thrown over my mouth to stifle my labored breathing, desperately trying to pump air into my lungs for the next sprint. I listened for the first time. A few seconds pass silently, then I hear him. Heavy footfall, snapping twigs behind me, and about 20 feet to my left. I dare not look in case he sees me. I have my phone, but I know I have little chance of signal between where I was. I knew he'd either hear me talking or see the light from my display. I'm not ashamed to say at this point I start to cry. The tears falling silently down my cheeks. "What the fuck?" I hear a deep voice exclaim. "Where are you? I know you're here. I saw you." I have to clasp both hands across my mouth to stop my scream escaping. I can hear him moving around. I panic, and I find enough courage to slowly peek from behind the tree. He was about 10 feet behind me, less than 20 feet to the left, with his back to me. I moved back, and my eyes search the area around me. I pick up a pretty heavy rock, and I carefully check on him again. His back is still turned, but he's searching through the trees, hunched down lower to the ground now. I make a snap decision, and with everything I have left, I threw the rock behind me and to the right. It clattered through the branches of the trees and made one hell of a noise. I watched him immediately bolt in its direction, laughing. He fucking laughed. I paused a little, hearing his footsteps get quieter, until I thought I wouldn't be so visible to him if I moved, and threw myself forward. I ran, trying to put as much distance between us as possible, but I was also aware that I was getting further and further away from home. I knew there had to be a stream somewhere close. If I found the stream, I can follow it, as it borders the land and ran parallel to some of the footpaths. I ran, and ran until the trees finally cleared, and I can just make out another field through them on the other side. I thank God and push myself a little further till I'm out of the trees and the ground disappears from below my feet, and I go head over shoulders down the stream embankment. I crash into the water below, my open mouth and lungs filling with muddy water. As I sputter it out, I feel both relieved to have found the stream and terrified he's heard me. My phone is now ruined. I slowly make my way downstream as quiet as possible, listening out for him the whole time as the stream borders the woods, looking up periodically just in case. After a while, maybe half an hour, I notice the trees begin to thin out and realize this is the edge of the woods where I would have been exiting and where the pathway connected to the original one I'd started on. If I ran, I could get home in less than 20 minutes. As quiet as I could, I dragged myself, on my stomach, back up the embankment, army style, wanting to stay as low as possible. I peeked over the top. I could just make out the opening of the woods exit path, about 50 feet away. I sat and scanned the forest line for a couple of minutes, my eyes trying to make out movement, despite it now being pitch black. Nothing. I couldn't hear anything either. I pushed myself up and sprinted as fast as I could across the field onto the pathway. I knew the gate I'd entered through was in the adjoining field. It really wasn't far. I was so happy. "You fucking bitch," came from a screech across the field. I swear my legs nearly gave out then and there. He had been waiting for me. I turned my head and saw him sprinting out of the woods at full pelt. I screamed and pushed myself further, tears coating my face. All I could do is run. I crossed into the main field now, and I could see the moonlight shining off the metal gate. My house was just 5 minutes away after that. I have never focused on anything as much as that gate. He was faster than me and getting closer, screaming at me the whole time about how he was going to slit my throat. I ran and ran, pushing myself up and over the gate and ran up the road. I dared look as he made the turn for my road. He was still fucking following me. I raced up my driveway and threw myself through the door, running into the living room, crying and screaming hysterically, pointing behind me toward the door. My dad ran outside while my mom grabbed hold of me as I collapsed, shaking. As it turned out, my parents had already called the police. As I said, I was going out for an hour or so at 7, and it was now past 12 a.m., and I hadn't answered when they had called, my now broken phone, which was very unlike me. We called the police again to explain. They came and I gave a full statement. Both of my parents and the police were horrified. Nothing like this happens here. There hasn't been a reported rape or murder in the last 100 years. But one look at me and it was obvious I was telling the truth. I was covered head to toe in cuts and bruises, soaking wet and covered in mud and blood. I won't go into how this experience changed me. It's depressing. But I will say, the thing that scares me the most is that they never even had a suspect. Despite him following me so closely, he was gone by the time my dad ran outside. That guy is still out there, and who knows what he's really capable of. And that's it.
Yeah, primal fear. And all this while you're high?
Yeah, on three joints.
Are you
joints.
Insane? How terrifying that is? Oh my God.
I'm scared when I have like one hit and I'm sitting in my own living room.
Yeah, I mean, you just, you know, think about yourself.
Yeah, right.
The thoughts inside.
Yeah, when I'm left alone with my own thoughts.
And he was 10 feet away.
Oh God.
I mean,
I know.
That's 10 feet, yeah. Like a room.
Pointing across the room, yeah.
To the corner.
No, I mean, talk about like horror film type shit. Like that's like a true chase scene, like through the
uh-huh.
woods.
Ridiculous.
So scary.
I mean, yeah, I didn't really have anything else to say.
Yeah, I wish we could have ended on a lighter note, I guess, but I was going for spooky in this Halloween episode.
This one was not spooky. It's just terrifying.
Right.
Yeah, but I do get what you say with the cinematic. Like, she was incredibly descriptive.
Right, like, you can picture it as she's describing it. Like, you can see it in your mind as, like, a movie playing out. Uh-huh. So, great writer.
Yeah, we hope you recovered in some capacity. I mean,
oh,
this
yeah,
is just
totally.
Really tough to deal with and continue living life.
Yeah, I mean, that goes for all of these stories. These are all terrifying stories.
Yeah. So, a lot of not wanting to meet.
Yes. To all these creeps, stay far away from all of us. Thanks. But anyway, I don't know. Do you have anything else to say?
No, I'm out.
Okay, cool.
There's really not much else to say. What's your good thing?
My good thing is that I'm home now and that I got a weighted stuffed animal. Did I mention that last time?
Can we please describe?
Baby Gorgeous?
Yes.
Baby Gorgeous is a 5-pound weighted stuffed animal. She's a cow, and she's got just the sweetest smile on her face. Is this silly? Maybe a little bit, but
is this necessary?
Does it feel good?
Yes.
Do I love her?
Yes.
So that's my good thing. What's your good thing?
My good thing will be partially gardening. I have been harvesting an abundance of tomatoes.
That's true. You have a lot of tomatoes.
It is actually insane how many tomatoes I've gotten off of 5 plants.
They went stupid. They went crazy.
They went stupid, went dumb. And I've probably harvested 150.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Maybe 100 between those two numbers. But I really had no idea that they just make this many, you know?
That so plants anyway. Be growing?
Just be growing so hard, dude. Just like working all day.
Uh-huh.
Soaking up that sun. But I have made tomato sauce and I am going to share the harvest with my grandma and family. So I think that will be fun.
That's very kind.
Yeah. Well, I can't possibly use it all, you know?
Yeah. And it's very tasty, your sauce. So why not share it?
Yeah. So I'm excited for that. And gardening is really cool. They're popping off. So that is my good thing.
Well, good. Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to check out a bunch of bonus episodes, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. We have a bunch of other fun perks over there. Check it out. You won't regret it. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to nottodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have a TikTok that is nottodaypodcast and a Twitter that is nottodaypodcast, but the T on the end of podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialessly. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialessly with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialessly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.